Republicans take over the House of Representatives this week.
And economists are fretting about what that means for the nation's debt limit.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Hello from American Public Media. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And in for Steve Chiatakis, I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org for Monday, January 3rd. Coming up, Facebook has a new friend on Wall Street, and iPhone users are not alarmed, but that's not a good thing.
But first, to Washington and the nation's debt limit. Yesterday on ABC's political talk show This Week, Obama administration economic advisor Austin Goolsbee warned that Congress should not play chicken with the nation's debt ceiling. Those are his words. It's currently a $14.3 trillion debt ceiling, and it'll need to be raised in a couple months to keep the country from going into default. Here's Austin Goolsbee.
If we hit the debt ceiling, that's essentially defaulting on our obligations, which is totally unprecedented in American history. The impact on the economy would be catastrophic. I mean, that would be a worse financial and economic crisis than anything we saw in 2008.
Now let's bring in Julia Coronado. She's chief economist at the investment bank BNP Paribas, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So is there any chance that Congress would actually do what Austin Goolsbee was talking about and not raise the nation's debt ceiling?
There is literally no chance that they'll not pass the debt ceiling and enter into the sort of catastrophic scenario that Mr. Goolsbee painted. However, the real question, and one that we were certainly tossing around at our morning meeting this morning, is how much of a concession will Republicans demand in order to raise the debt ceiling? How much deficit reduction will they want to see? And how much of that deficit reduction will be near-term cuts to spending versus longer-term measures to bring in the deficit?
And that kind of demanding, that those cuts that they would want could really impact the recovery, you think?
Absolutely. So we saw at the end of the year that Congress passed a fiscal package that would help the economy by putting more money into consumers' pockets. Now the question is how much of that will be unwound by cuts to government spending and other programs that do, in fact, flow into the economy and help economic growth. So there does seem to be a big push by Republicans to cut spending in the near term. And the question is how much and how much of an impact will that then have on GDP?
And Julia, just quickly, I mean, how much are we relying right now on government support for this nascent recovery in the economy?
Well, it's been a pretty significant source of support, both from the federal government and from the Federal Reserve. In fact, it probably gave the economy more than half of the growth that we saw last year. So looking forward, we're not going to get much of a contribution from either the federal government or the Fed in 2011. So the private sector really is going to carry all of the burden, and that's a big change from where we've been. So we really need to see some stronger contribution, stronger hiring in particular, coming from the private sector.
All right. Julia Coronado, chief economist at BNP Paribas. Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure.
Well, when Congress returns to work this week, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke can expect the criticism of his easy money policies to increase. He'll be feeling the heat not just from members of Congress, but from his own colleagues inside the Federal Reserve. There are new Fed members this year who aren't sold on the central bank strategy of flooding the economy with cheap money. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale has the story.
One new Fed voting member is Charles Plosser. He heads the Philadelphia Federal Reserve, and in a speech last month, Plosser laid out his concerns with the Fed's decision to buy billions more in Treasury bonds.
I'm still somewhat skeptical that we will see much of a stimulative effect from this new round of purchases.
The increased internal criticism of Fed policy offers hope to those who think the central bank is risking runaway inflation.
With those additional members who have been opposed to quantitative easing, there's a chance that we could see some change.
Columbia Business School professor Charles Calamiris says Congress will also pressure the Fed this year, especially when a Texas representative who wants to get rid of the Fed takes over the House committee responsible for overseeing it.
Now that you've got Ron Paul breathing down Ben Bernanke's neck, I think that there's going to also be a desire to be responsive to external critics a little bit.
The Fed's easy money lasts until June, and Calamiris hopes the new voting members can put a premature end to the policy. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Facebook is getting almost a half a billion dollar investment from Goldman Sachs. The New York Times today reports that the granddaddy of investment banks is going young adult in a move that boosts Facebook's value to about $50 billion. Our friend, Marketplace's Scott Tong, is following this story for us this morning, and he joins us now. Good morning, Scott.
Hello, Jeremy.
So Facebook is getting some street cred, as in Wall Street. Does that make Facebook establishment now?
Well, Facebook's always been an established, well, long been an established web destination, and now its business model may have graduated to grown-up status. Facebook makes money by selling ads and what are called virtual goods. Say you play a game on the website, you want a faster car, you have to pay real money. I mean, we're talking half a billion users who now use the word friend as a verb. I spoke just now to Justin Urquhart-Stewart at the firm Seven Investment Management in London, and he calls the Facebook evolution fascinating.
The very fact you then get someone like Goldman Sachs taking interest in it, now you realize this has just moved from something which is an interesting entertainment for the younger generation into something which is a very serious business opportunity.
And Scott, we've heard a lot about whether Facebook is going to go public. Is it more likely now that it will go public soon?
Well, here's how the Securities and Exchange Commission rules work. As a company like Facebook gets more investors, and Facebook is getting it from banks like Goldman Sachs and people who buy shares from early venture capital firms, the SEC says you have to disclose your financial results when you have more than 500 shareholders. So the thinking is, once that information gets public, you may as well go public. Still, the CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, has said lately, don't hold your breath.
All right. Marketplace's Scott Tong in Washington. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Later this week, Las Vegas hosts the Consumer Electronics Show, one of the biggest gadget trade shows of the year. Nearly every big tech company shows off their latest gizmo. Jennifer Collins reports that this year, the tablet computer is taking over.
Stop into Best Buy later this year, and this is what you'll see.
Tablets, 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 tablets.
Michael Gartenberg is with tech research firm Gartner. With an estimated 13 million iPads sold, he says Apple is the king of the tablet. For now.
This year is going to be the year where vendors try and take that crown from Apple.
Vendors like Hewlett-Packard, Motorola, BlackBerry maker RIM may introduce as many as 47 new models at the Consumer Electronics Show alone. Tim Behern is a tech consultant with Creative Strategies.
Whether it be RIM or even Microsoft, the ultimate success lies on thousands and thousands of apps being developed for these platforms.
Gartenberg says some of these new tablets are bound to strike consumers as too expensive, too cumbersome.
Some will be, in the words of Dorothy Parker, products that should not be tossed aside lightly, but rather thrown with great force.
But there will be dozens of others to choose from. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Jeremy, you may have heard that iPhone users haven't been hearing their alarms going off since the new year began.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
Yeah, I think you're one of them. We've had email at marketplace.org saying some iPhone alarms are back to working correctly. Uh-huh. But we've also got an email reporting continuing problems. And there's word of the same in Europe and Asia. Even though Apple promised the built-in timers would be fixed by now, Apple has had no comment on today's problems. But remember how Steve Jobs explained the last big trouble with the iPhone's antenna?
Most smartphones behave exactly the same way.
I'm not sure he'd try using that one again. Let's go with this one.
We're not perfect. And phones aren't perfect either.
Yeah, that's the trouble ticket. It can happen to the best of them. Don't be alarmed.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, January 3rd. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Bob Moon. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. The New York Times reports today that a threat by the website WikiLeaks to expose corruption at a major U.S. bank has prompted Bank of America to assemble a special action squad of sorts. The paper reports a team of up to 20 top executives has been reviewing cases in which computers were lost or compromised.
Meanwhile, the British government has launched a drive to stop obesity in Britain from reaching American proportions. The UK has launched a new $300 million program to encourage healthy eating. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
Millions of British families will be offered discounts worth at least $75 on healthy foods like whole grain rice and green beans. Fitness products are included in the government-sponsored scheme. They'll be $8 off the price of a pair of running shoes. Multinational food companies are funding much of the drive. But the campaign group National Obesity Forum is unimpressed. It believes that after using the discounts, people will soon revert to their bad habits. Spokesman Tam Fry says the food companies would do better to spend the money making healthier products.
If we had food which was without the high levels of fat and salt and sugar, then I don't think that we would need schemes like this in the first place, because everybody would be eating food which was basically healthy.
He says 40 to 50% of Brits are overweight or obese, not quite as bad as the 75% figure for the US, but Britain is waddling in America's wake. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, January the 3rd. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And in for Steve Chiotakis, I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org.
Well, on Friday, Bob, we'll get the first big employment report of the new year from the Labor Department. It'll tell us what the unemployment rate was in December. Of course, back in November, it was 9.8%. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has been covering the labor market for us and joins us now with a look at the big picture. Hi, Mitchell.
Hi, Jeremy.
So a year ago at this time, things were pretty bleak. You've been tracking the job market since then. How far have we come?
Jeremy, you know, compared to last year, pretty far. The unemployment rate remains high, it's true. But instead of cutting jobs like they were last year, private employers have been adding them, maybe 100,000 a month on average. That is enough to absorb new workers, high school and college grads, moms and dads coming off parental leave. The problem is it's not nearly enough to give jobs back to the 8 million Americans who got laid off. Many of these people are still unemployed. The time it takes to find a new job is near record highs. So unless we start getting two or three times more jobs added every month, unemployment is going to remain high all year.
But Mitchell, we've been getting some good news from companies recently. Their profits are higher. Consumers have started to spend a little bit more. Couldn't that translate into some good news for the job market?
That's really our best hope. Economist Karen Dinan at the Brookings Institution spun out the best case scenario for me.
I think what people are looking for is for the pickup in spending to kickstart hiring. And if it does, it has the potential to unleash a virtuous cycle, really. If we see more job growth, we would see incomes pick up. That would make the higher rate of spending growth sustainable, which in turn would lead to yet more hiring.
Sounds like a pretty good virtuous cycle, Mitchell. But what could throw that off track, if anything?
Any number of things. Gas prices, for instance, they've been going up.
Yep.
That could spook consumers. And for businesses, even if they are selling more now, they could just cope the same way they've been coping. They get their people to work harder, work longer hours, they hire more temps
right,
without making those people permanent. That's great for their bottom line, not so great for the long-term unemployed, and not great for the economy as a whole. In fact, the unemployment rate's now at 9.8%. Most economists expect it to still be around 9% next January.
Well, we'll see if that prediction comes true. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
The recent elections didn't have a lot of bright spots for folks who worry about greenhouse gases and global warming. As a new U.S. Congress begins work later this week, some investors in renewable energy technologies are nervous. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Adrian Hill reports.
In the last election cycle, many congressional candidates campaigned against government plans to put a price on greenhouse gases. Their worry was to do that would cost the economy. Here's an ad from West Virginia's Joe Manchin.
I'll take dead aim at the cap and trade bill.
The plan to price carbon emissions seems pretty well shot dead, at least for now. And other federal government initiatives addressing global warming are also in trouble, like those giving tax breaks and research funding to renewable energy. Think solar and wind. That's partly because there's not much agreement in D.C. about whether the Earth is actually warming up and if air pollution is causing it. Brad Johnson is with the left-leaning think tank Center for American Progress. He says when you combine questions about the climate with the mood to cut and cut some more.
Certainly, clean energy and climate-related funding is going to be high up on the chopping block.
The outgoing Congress did throw the industry a bone. As part of the compromise tax bill just signed, a provision that helps clean energy companies was extended for a year. Brad Nordholm is with Starwood Energy Group, which invests in new energy projects. He says it's a piecemeal solution to a longer-term issue.
Having a consistent federal policy towards energy investment is by far the thing that we need most.
Nordholm says investors are skittish when they don't know what the tax picture will look like in a year, especially because many energy projects take years, plural, to get going. But investment isn't just waiting on the sidelines. Beverly Macy is from Y&M Partners. It's a consulting group that works with clean technology firms.
Most companies that we're involved with, whether it's with wind or solar, really look at this as a global phenomenon.
Macy says companies and private investors see an emerging international market for greener energy technology, and that in many cases, a lack of federal investment is a hang-up instead of a deal-breaker. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
And finally, Bob, a man in Spain had a good start to the year. He and his buddies won the lottery. The prize was about $12 million, except, oops, he had thrown the ticket in the garbage. So he went scouring his house for the tickets, and he couldn't find it. And he went down to the neighborhood dumpster, and he tipped it over, and he went through all the trash. And the ticket was there.
No!
Yes, it was. He found it. As was a good life lesson. Don't throw winning lottery tickets into the garbage.
And I was worried about my mom throwing away that receipt for that gift I wanted to return.
Got to be careful what you throw away.
That's right.
In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.